Hello! Welcome to Weekly Geek Speak. I'm Andrew.
I'm Scott.
And I'm Steve.
And we're back in the cinematic for another week, another joyous expulsion of geeky gubbins to splash across your faces, down your ears, and into your souls. And today we'll also be joined by Andrew Say, the director, producer, and man behind the song The Zombie Sang.
What does the zombie say?
you can find us on iTunes. We're on Stitcher, Spreaker, and Podcastland as well. Ooh. Follow us on Twitter at Weekly Geek Speak. We're on Facebook. We've got a few more likes on there. We're on a 204 now, which is nice. Thank you. We're nearing 1,250 tweety peoples. So we're hopefully by the time this comes out, we'll have broke 1,250.
I'm 27 years old.
27 years old.
I thought we were chucking all the stats.
But Steve, is actually this week. He is
36.
Yeah. I knew that, but I didn't want to say in case he cried. Yeah, it's one of those ages.
And he doesn't look a day over 46.
But it's not only Steve's birthday.
Oh.
It's also today, on the Friday, 26th of September, which isn't your birthday.
Nope.
It's Linda Hamilton's birthday. She played one very good character. And was also in Dante's Peak.
Who was it?
So yeah, Linda Hamilton, I think she owned that movie next to Arnie in a way. She came out the second strongest character next to a robot. Well, especially in the second one, let's be honest.
Kyle Reese got himself fairly well.
I don't like Kyle Reese. I think he's just a little pleb running around going, oh no, I'm not as strong as a robot. Have sex with me.
I know, it's a beautiful time paradox, but he's still a complete idiot thinking, you know what, I could probably get away with burning my best mate. Right. That's not going to affect the future.
It'd be fine.
It's a good job it works out.
And you know all those your mom comebacks? He can do them.
Yeah.
Because he did.
Yeah.
Oh, you want me to go and fight that T-100? All right. That's what your mom's.
Also, happy birthday to Jesus!
Oh,
Jim Carveazel, is that how he pronounces his name?
Oh, right, okay.
Don't care about him, just wanted to happy birthday to a Jesus.
Happy birthday.
Because I know it's purported Jesus' holiday, it's Jesus' birthday, it's purported to be when? It got moved to Christmas because we were all pagans and we celebrated some festival, so it got appropriate by Christians. But there is supposed to be a day that people make out is born. Is it around this time?
I don't know. I honestly can't.
I don't know.
No. Tweet if you know.
It's now Jim Caviezel Day.
It is.
Jim Caviezel. I'm a Caviezelist. It's my religion.
I've never watched Passion of Christ. I have no will to. Maybe it's wrong, but because I've heard it's so anti-Semitic and trying to shock people into faith that I have no interest in ever. Plus, I know where it ends. It's been spoilt to fuck. Everyone just thinks he can spoil it, don't they?
Mm. Mm. What is disappointing is you never see his great escape from the cave.
No, that's the best thing. That's the best. It's like watching a Houdini film and don't see him.
I'm still waiting for the sequel as well, when he rises again, but no.
Oh, yeah. And then Bane shows up.
Yeah.
I love Easter. It's all this imagery of a man being crucified on some archaic torture device, and we're all just munching chocolate eggs going,
look at the cute rabbit.
Yeah. Stupid religion, isn't it?
And
anyway,
also,
that's also pagan, isn't it? The rabbits and
rabbits
things.
Pagan, yeah.
And I can't believe in a holiday that moves depending on the month and the moon. Like, I don't know. I know it's not necessarily an anniversary, but like, you can't take it seriously when it moves.
I enjoy Christmas for the atmosphere and the family coming together, and there's a great feel that has been created by Western corporations. However, my favourite holiday is still Halloween, because I think it just taps into a childhood running around in a mask. That's fun for me.
Yeah,
and there's no, oh, isn't it sad? It's just about celebrating the dead, I believe. I don't know.
What I find interesting about Halloween is it seems more of an American holiday we've appropriated. So it seems like a good arms around the world holiday. A bit like Christmas, I guess.
But then, it's weird, I don't think trick-or-treating. I think getting pissed and eating food. So maybe Halloween for me is kind of like a Christmas.
Best eating food and watching horror movies.
With a mask on.
Yeah.
Not even that sometimes, just my pants. Also, happy birthday, Sherry Moon Zombie, who is not very good at acting. Moving on, we'd like to say goodbye to Jaws.
That shark.
The shark.
It was quite, it's been, when were it made?
76.
He's had a good career. He had several sequels.
Well, it's not bad for a rubber shark. Mm.
No.
Richard
Keel, there we go.
This is the heartiest sender.
Oh, dear.
Jaws always caught my imagination in the Roger Moore Bonds. I don't know if I liked him finding a love in Moonraker, but he's one of the most iconic Bond villains, and he will be forever remembered because he's that iconic.
Hmm.
Was he in The Waterboy, or was that just someone who seemed like
him? Yeah, he was.
He was, yeah.
Yes. He was.
Or was it Happy Gilmore?
No, Happy Gilmore, sorry. Yeah.
He was an Adam Sandler.
That is what I meant to say. He was a very specific looking man.
Yes, he was.
And it's a shame.
It is a huge shame.
I take my teeth out to him.
Recommend Decommend is a game we play every other week. It is a game where, well, what do, Stephen?
Well, we bring all the films that we've watched since we last recorded. We throw in our highest rated film and we discuss it. We throw in our lowest rated films. We all have a little discussion and then we vote on each other's films to go for the ultimate recommend or ultimate decommend. If we can't decide, we throw it out to you. But usually we're pretty good at...
We've been quite good for the past few weeks.
Steering it, touch wood.
I always hate when we chuck it out to the audience.
Why? Because you don't have any control. You feel like control.
I think, that's entirely it.
Well, we'll start with you. Control this round. There we go. So what's your recommend for this week, Scott?
I've only watched two films. So I guess, to be honest, I could have watched 5, 6, 7, or 8, and it might have been top. Jurassic Park.
Very good.
Okay.
Classic Spielberg. Perfect time for my generation when it came out, so we're all grew up Jurassic Park fans. I don't trust anyone who doesn't like it. I don't like anyone who doesn't like it. I pour scorn whoever dares mention that they don't like it.
Oh, right.
But I never meet anyone who says that.
I can't imagine anyone. Can't imagine.
It just captures my imagination. It's full of great moments, classic moments. Jeff Goldblum's brilliant. My favourite Sam Neill film, not that I think that's a category. And the late, great Richard Attenborough seeing his John Hammond so soon after his death was quite good.
A good appearance from Samuel L. Jackson in there.
Yeah, well. Yeah. And Newman from Seinfeld.
Still do that.
I do it all the time.
You see the magic word?
And I always, when he gets that can that he's smuggling in to get the vials... I always wanted one. I don't know what I'd use it for. I never smuggle vials. But I seem to desperately want it. And it's the power of like early 90s cinema. Like, I always wanted a talk boy from Home Alone 2.
Oh, yes. That would have been amazing.
But what's funny there is you reference the characters, which I think is very interesting, not the dinosaurs. It's the great performances within the film.
Yeah, definitely.
Make the film, in a way.
Definitely.
The only weak point is those damn children, but they're forgivable because they go through hell.
You know what? The boy's not too bad. The girl who has one stock uber shocked impression, like, couldn't be a more like. If you told
this
your little
shocked,
kid to
yeah.
look shocked, and then it'd make you laugh. It's like that constantly.
But she does get dinosaur snot all over her.
She does, and that's the least she deserves.
And you know that bit where she falls through the roof tile towards the end?
Yeah.
That Velociraptor should have fucking ripped her legs off.
It really should have.
That would have been a great bit.
It's probably the first... It's probably the earliest I learned about DNA, as much as I learned... Like, it hardly goes into a comprehensive analysis of DNA.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure that introduced me to the concepts.
Mm.
Yeah. And I still like to pretend I'm watching that Jurassic Park DNA explanation.
Yeah.
when anyone brings up genetics, I go straight back. That little strand pops up, like, hey...
What I really like is the script. It almost feels there's little ad lib bits in there where when they're talking. I think it's just Spielberg's incredible direction in terms of making it feel that real and comfortable. You know, when they're in that way, going around looking at all the laboratories and things, and the way they talk to each other and stuff.
It's,
and in the cars, the way Ian, Dr. Ian Malcolm, his character is very talkative. He's the very way that...
They're all very pragmatic. Yeah. You don't get the idea that any of them particularly like each other.
Mm.
But they're all trying to... Which I like, it's more real. Mm. Although there's a heavily implied relationship between Sam Neill and the woman.
Mm.
And then seeing him warm to the kids as he gets more protective over them. Which is completely, like, fucked over in Jurassic Park 3, actually. I'm slowly starting to realise why Andrew hates it so much. Because it's like his whole arc over the film.
Yeah.
He hates kids, but he protects them.
Yeah, he's
and
looked after them.
He grows a bit. Oh, it's implied, at least. Mm. There's no moment he says it. Which is great, actually, the more you think about it.
And actually, the greatest character, the ranger, I've forgotten his name.
Oh, yeah. Clever girl.
Great scene. Yeah, so that's a very strong candidate coming in foot first. So we'll go to Steve now. What have you been watching?
Up until the other day, I'd watched none. I've managed to watch four.
Oh, good stuff.
So the two I'm going to bring are two that are new out and new on streaming. My recommend is The Dirties.
The Dirties?
Mm.
Documentary on Sheffield Wednesday?
Yeah. It's a Kevin Smith. It's got Kevin Smith's.
I should have said Legion. Everyone hates that. It transcends more.
It's got Kevin Smith's name attached to it. It's Kevin Smith's something workshop or something. It's got his name at the beginning, and it's a subsidiary that I'd never heard of. But so he's attached his name to it. Written by and starring the lead guy who stars in it also wrote it and directed it. I don't want to give too much away because I didn't really know anything about it. And basically the tagline is two guys filming a high school comedy about getting revenge on bullies. Mm. Trouble is, one of them isn't joking. Mm. That's pretty much it. It's a very short film. It's very to the point. Incredibly engrossing. The characters are massive, really, really believable. I mean, something like Elephant, which just felt long and drawn out and slow and kind of... Yeah, this is... very short to the point, and you buy into the character by the end. You're going holy shit, and it takes an interesting angle to look at the sort of quite a very, very difficult subject to cover, but it's well worth a watch. I think it's an hour and 22 minutes. I know I like the length of my films, but yeah, it's literally short to the point, doesn't overcomplicate anything, and it's incredible. At times I found myself going, oh no, this is just a film, because it opens like a documentary. It says all the this has been filmed for the sake of the things. None of the footage has been altered. But it's really strong. 7 out of 10, well worth a watch.
Hey, I've got a question. Do you put a lot of stock in like film length in terms of pace?
You
like it to not let up?
No, but if you're watching a film and you go in and it's 3 hours and you're two and a half hours in and you're like, nothing's actually, and then the last 20 minutes something happens, I don't know.
But that can easily happen, as it's always Mad Max in an hour and a half.
Yeah, it's one of those weird things.
Whereas I sometimes find 3 hour films go by in a flash. Same with Private Ryan and things.
It depends on how you...
I don't think there's a right or wrong length.
No.
If something's over long, it's an editing problem, and it's some things.
Because I've watched some 90 minute films which have felt like I've been
for
hours.
But no, I think this one I needed to mention the pace, because it is just short to the point. It's not dragged out. You buy into the characters in such a short space of time, and it does leave you just going, shit, okay.
Valid comment though. I was curious.
Well worth a watch.
I've got a lot of things I could pick. Sevens and eights though, so not anything hugely huge. Soylent Green.
Oh!
Slow paced. Sorry, Steve, you might not like that. But it's very... I like the 70s for how they had to create worlds without much, you know?
Yeah.
This is the case. It's a kind of low-budgety feeling sci-fi film. It's not that far in the future. In fact, it's 2022, which obviously was a longer distance than those days, because it was made all of 40 years ago. Starred Charlton Heston, being... typical Charlton Heston kind of character. He has to shout at the end of a film. I think that's how he ends all films. But I liked the world it created. Now, I'm sorry I always come back to this film, but it is the film which I kind of place as bad science fiction, and it is Hunger Games for world building. I thought it was very plastic 2D, didn't feel the world. It just felt like I just didn't feel there was. I was actually in a world. I felt like I was reading a crap book.
Fair enough.
I thought I was reading Lady Gaga's album notes.
It feels paper thin, but the point is, like, I come to watch Soylent Green, and you don't have much money and things, but you really get that. It's very much the, like Elysium, this disparity between rich and poor. Poor people are crammed into small places. They don't have homes. They're sleeping on tens of people sleeping on stairwells. If you're lucky, you have a room in a house, and that's literally what you have, a room. Whereas rich people live in these massive tower blocks. They have lush, lavish apartments, which have women in there as part of the furniture. Right. Charlton Heston constantly refers to the love interest as, oh, well, you're a part of the furniture in this house. You know, you've got it set up. This is your life. You've got it good here. Fresh fruit and things is what you... amazing to, like, Charlton Heston, who's investigating this crime that's gone off in this rich apartment. So actually, when he goes in as a police officer who doesn't earn very much money, he steals a load of stuff from that apartment so he can take it home and share it with his roomie, who is, I've forgotten the name of the actor, but he's very good as well, old chap. But it has that iconic scene which you see referenced in things where he dies. It's but the world it paints, it's a believable Earth. There's a feel of Judge Dredd in there as well that we saw in the newest Dredd. It's a sad, sorry state of affairs, and it's an even worse state of affairs than we even know. We all know the twist. It's like The Sixth Sense that it is.
Yeah, but, I always hear that about it. Well, but it's not its fault.
But it is one of those great twists in film that... It's so bad that the poor people are forced into this area, but they're also eating each other in turn, you know? It's a great sci-fi yarn. It is very slow, it is very of its time, but it's very, very interesting social microscope to our society in a way as well. Of
all
how
good sci-fis are.
And somebody had a real good contract to make beige hats.
Okay.
There is one.
Mine had a beige hat. Did yours have a beige hat?
No.
There is a scene.
I thought we could theme them.
Damn.
There's famous riot scenes where it's quite horrible, actually, where they drive bulldozers in to actually take live people and flip them into the back, and that's how they clear the riot. They literally drive bulldozers in and throw the people in the back.
Okay.
Everyone's wearing a beige hat. I don't know why. It must be the fashion.
Yeah.
So whereas in Hunger Games they all dress as Lady Gaga, over here they're just wearing
beige hats
and Soylent Green. Soylent Green looks like little plastic squares though. I imagine it's like really cheap chocolate, you know, like coloured chocolate you can get, which really isn't anything, it's just weird. Soylent Green, that was basically my pitch for Soylent Green.
Cool.
Which brings us to voting. Ooh. As some like to call it. Scott, you were voting first.
I've not seen / heard of The Dirties. Sounds interesting. I'd be interested to watch that eventually. But Soylent Green's quite a classic 70s sci-fi, which gets ruined to death. I knew the twist before I ever watched it, when I watched it a few years back. I hate when that happens. It happened with Seven and it happened with Six Sense. Why do people do it?
Yeah, it's annoying.
But it's still a good film, despite that. So hopefully people can put that from their mind. So it's got to be Soylent Green.
Soylent Green. So it leaves me to vote next. The Dirties sounds a very interesting concept. You pointed out Elephant there and you said it was slow and things. I'd just put a disagreeing point argument to that is I actually found it extremely horribly tense throughout the whole thing. I love the way it's filmed. It follows characters, literally follows... Gus Van Zandt directed it, I believe.
Yeah.
Yes,
just follows them around, and then you leave that person and go follow this person. It's like one shot, the whole film. But there's this ominous undertone of you know what's going to happen. If you read the... It's no lie. You know what's going to happen. And I really like that. So I am interested in See the Dirties. An example of a bad version, I would say, is we need to talk about Kevin, because I thought that was a terrible film.
I've been meaning to watch that. Is it not good?
I didn't like it.
Oh, I wanted to see that.
I can't really exactly remember why to put a good argument against it at the moment, but I didn't like it at all. And I thought Elephant was much more powerful in the realms of high school shooting murder things. But The Dirties, it sounds very interesting. However, we've got something that has been a huge part of my life. It's probably top three films that have always been there for me. And
I know what you mean, yeah.
It's like that, Batman, 89, and there must be some... Lion King is probably the one. These are my movies. These are me. These are films that taught me why I love film. The intensity, the suspense, the fact you have giant lizards running around, the fact it still stands up today. It really was the peak of Spielberg for me. It's such a good film. I love it, and I can't go anywhere else other than Jurassic
Park. Everyone loves it.
Yeah.
Every single person.
Which moves on nicely. Steve!
Steve, yeah. Would you pick the classic Soylent Green or the brilliant, no one could argue, no one could ever disagree.
So would I pick the film that...
Jurassic Park.
The film that I've only seen once and didn't enjoy and I've never gone back to, which incidentally I have bought on DVD.
Or Jurassic Park, yeah.
Or Soylent Green, which I've never watched.
Even though I borrowed the DVD off you?
Yeah.
Okay, because I'm fascinated by this. So no, I'm not going to interject. You've got 3 minutes. I'm not telling
this
you.
You've got
all the time in the world. Jurassic Park, why didn't you grab you like it grabbed every other person in the world?
I've been over this a million times. It's just, it didn't. It caught me at the wrong time and I expected something action-packed with dinosaurs probably. And I went in going, oh, a film about dinosaurs, and came out going, that was boring. The children were annoying. I didn't like it, and I found it boring. I didn't like the character. I didn't like the kids. They annoyed me, and I've never felt the need to revisit it. And you guys go on about it so much, and I thought maybe I should. I'm being harsh. So I have bought the DVD. I've got one and two. I bought them both together. So they're on my side. When I get time, I will watch them. Yeah, and Soylent Green's one that I've never seen. Like you said, it's one of those where the plot's pretty much been spoiled forever. I think films these days where it has, oh, biggest twist you'll ever see in a movie as the tagline, and you're like, oh, fucking hell, right, you can see it coming.
What
now.
Is the biggest twist you've ever seen in a movie?
That's a good point. I'll save that one point. For an open forum one day.
Nice. nicely played.
But so I genuinely, this is a, I know I always say, oh, it's a tough one, but a film that I've never gone back to that I will do, and a film I've never seen, I don't know how to play this.
You can forfeit it's a weird and one. Let everyone vote Jurassic Park. Or you can.
I'm going to do that. I'm going to see what happens.
Or just say Jurassic Park.
I'm going to let
you have to do that.
I'm going to do that. I'm going to let the
public. No, because I like Steve squirming in a corner. Let's keep him here for a minute.
No, I think if I step back, I can't vote on a film that
I
didn't
but
enjoy.
I have to say, if it goes to vote, it goes to vote on Soylent Green or Jurassic Park.
Yeah,
which is fine.
So you've took yourself out. You could pick a winner.
We've never had this when someone's
the
just
thing is, like,
jumped out the race.
I can vote on a film that I haven't gone back to, and I will. So I'm putting it up there thinking,
I
can vote on a film that I've never seen.
I tell you what, let's make this interesting.
So I don't know.
If we give you 2 weeks, will you watch Jurassic Park?
Oh yeah, I'll watch it.
Shall we base it purely on what he finds?
2 weeks.
I will happily watch it.
Watch Jurassic Park.
Yeah, that's
and
why
Soylent
I bought
Green,
it. I will happily
and
watch
then
it.
You can come along.
Or even, I mean, I'm willing to just do this. Watch Jurassic Park again. If you still don't like it, Soylent Green wins.
Yeah.
All right. I get the feeling that I will, and I'll go in and I'll enjoy it. That's why I bought it. But
I want to hear your revisit.
I don't want to vote on something I'm not sure about and something I haven't seen. I feel that would be wrong.
Okay, and
that's
also
my genuine.
Me and Scott will watch them. We'll have that as our film focus in a couple of weeks.
All right.
Jurassic Park.
2 weeks cool. Time. Join us. We'll be watching Jurassic Park. We'll find out what Steve thinks.
Cool.
It's going to be momentous.
I love it when we do it on air.
Yeah.
I like it. Just, let's do it.
Which moves? We haven't concluded that one. Can we get a conclusion for Deeper Men this week? Scott, you go first. Who are you decommending?
Again, I've only seen two films, so a very reluctant decommend.
Ooh.
Flintstones in Viva Rock Vegas.
Okay.
Reluctant. You put reluctant before that, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay. Just checking.
Is that the second one?
It's the third
with
one.
Stephen Bald. Third
bloody
one.
Bloody hell.
Shit.
Okay.
It's not John Goodman or Rick Moranis, alas. It's the fat guy from the Full Monty who's also in. Was he in Game of Thrones?
Mark Addy.
Who he's called?
Yeah.
Stephen Baldwin.
Right.
And I think it was Kirstie Alley playing Wilma. And it's a bit of a prequel when Fred's meeting Wilma and they go to Rock Vegas.
Right.
It just doesn't have the charm or brilliance of the first one with John Goodman.
With the weird domestic situations. The Channel 5 drama storyline.
Exactly. It just doesn't have just the iconic, brilliant moments of that first one that we'll all cherish and remember forever.
Those moments when the feet come through the floor.
And the record player with the bird.
Right there. Like, the only really good bit I can think of in terms of animals, because these are the best bit of Flintstones, seeing how they appropriate or how they turn each animal into a slave for one specific task that weirdly evokes modern day technology. It's weird. It's a weird documentary. I never knew we were like that. But but when he presses a remote and a little bird flies out and goes all the way to the telly and back. Caught my imagination. When I'm rich, I'm going to have that.
You may have sold it. I'm keeping that there. I'm keeping that gem.
Can we keep decommend with something with a bird on a spring?
It was just very, very average.
Oh, that's a shame.
It is a shame. And I forgot the main thing. It's got Kazoo in it. I don't know if you're familiar with him, Gazoo.
No.
The Great Gazoo. He's kind of when the Flintstones show jumped the shark. So this like this alien from like the fifth dimension, a bit like Batmite or Mixel Spitlick, turns up.
Right.
This little green alien that only they can see and can magic stuff.
Oh, I know
he is. Okay. Yeah,
he's in it.
Right.
It's irritating. I didn't need that. The first Flintstones is a beautiful pseudo-realistic reconstruction of pre-man. Whereas this just completely jumps the shark with aliens and it's just, it's not realistic. It's not, that is my
that is troubling to hear.
Lack of realism.
It's getting me down. So Steve, what's your decommend?
My decommend is, again, this was on Netflix this time. Wanted to watch it. Kevin Smith film. That they've been big talking about on a podcast, the podcast for quite a while. The idea of it sounded good. It's Jason Mewes who was helming this one, and it was Jay and Silent Bob's super groovy cartoon movie.
Is he directing it? Is he?
Jason Mewes did all the stuff for it. Yeah, he basically gave it to Jason Mewes as a project and said, "It's yours if you." It's one of those, you know, he stayed off drugs and he said he'd do Clerks 2 and you do this. He gave him the
film, just because someone
I remember, and said, you can have the concept. They came up with it.
Really pays to be friends with someone famous, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So when do you get famous?
Especially someone as generous and nice as Kevin Smith, who just does this.
He's like, just,
like, I'm not trying to take anything away from him.
No.
But he's never struck me as someone who should helm a project. Let's
So having heard, spent a year listening to quite a few Kevin Smith podcasts and heard the build up to this and stuff, I thought, it's going to be okay. It was awful. It was really, really poor. It looked like a really, you know, that when the sort of late 90s sort of animated funny cartoons were on the internet and things, it looks a bit like a naff. It didn't look very good. And if you take all the sort of slightly funny Jason Mewes jokes out of all of the Kevin Smith films, where they have their place and they're a bit like a bit over the top, bit dirty, snooty booties, all the little things, and you just make an hour of that and you take it slightly over the top so it isn't funny anymore, it just fell flat. It's awful.
Give me an average super groovy cartoon movie joke.
There's Ralph Garman playing Dick Head, who falls in a vat of stuff, which on podcast when they're discussing it sounds really funny, and he falls in this vat because he's born with a micro penis and he turns into this giant penis head, and they're like,
I don't even think that sounds funny, like, in concept. It sounds a
it's
bit.
It's just.
It sounds like.
It's
something you joked with your friend when you were 13.
But that's it, and when Kevin Smith got the banter and they're talking about it, they make it.
Yeah, they bring Kevin, the charm.
Kevin Smith brings that. You buy into the ideas and the things that he has. You know, okay, go on, I'll laugh along. But no, it just didn't work. It was awful. Which is a shame, terrible.
I'm sorry.
Which was, as I say, disappointing. I wanted something just to chuckle at, and thought after watching The Dirties, and it just didn't. Failed, unfortunately.
My decommend would have been Stafe.
Stafe,
yeah.
What's wrong with Stafe?
Not wrong with
it. I'm not having that.
No, come on.
Stafe's awesome.
He is.
It's a little film called The Perfect Host, starring, what's he called? Niles.
David Hyde Pierce.
Okay. It starts off quite an interesting little concept where this policey man, not policey man, criminally man, a bank robber is trying to escape from the law, and he ends up knocking on someone's door and going into the house and pretending he knows something. It's David Hyde Pierce's house. You get him being fabulously Nilesy. He doesn't do much else. But I love Niles as a character. But it turns out, on a darker twist, that Niles is not what he seems. He's slightly crazy. So you get this bait and switch going on between the captor becomes the captive. And that's really good. Then that all happens. It's goofy, it's silly, it was adding comfortably 6 out of 10, you know, it was fine. Would have passed by, would have never been spoke about on the podcast. However, in the last 20 minutes it defined overdeveloping a storyline when everything had to overly tie into everything else, you know? It could have left it at a certain point.
No ambiguity or...
There was a nice ending, you know? An interesting ending, which would have been a great ending.
Mm.
Or a passable ending, shall I say. It isn't great. Yeah, no, it's absolutely fine. Netflix rubbish. But it just decided to go a step further. And then even finalising the twist seemed overlong and unnecessary. There was 10 different ways, even in that sequence, where you could have had some cool kind of finish, but no, it just carried on talking about it for a little while and then finished.
An ending should never feel like housekeeping.
No. That's exactly what it is. There's a great make of it what you will endings it could have been. It could have had nothing spelled out, make of it what you will. No, it just overstretched it. It was a 5 out of 10. It was fine. I didn't begrudge the time wasted. But it just didn't need to carry on as long as it did, really. Which is a shame. So mine is The Perfect Host.
Okay.
So, Scott, you have The Perfect Host with Niles, or Jane and Silent Bob's super groovy cartoon movie.
Oh, I used to love Frasier. That doesn't bear any relevance to this, but deserves saying out loud. not seen either? Probably doubt I'll ever see either. Is it weird that I go from either to either each time?
No. Mixing it up, I like it.
But some people say either and others say either. I say both. What's that say about me? Anyway.
Let's call the whole thing off.
Shows you how much I've got to say about both films. It sounds to me like super goofy cartoon movie because it sounds like... I'm trying to word this just right because I think everyone likes a bit of juvenile humour. God knows we've engaged in it.
Definitely. Yeah, I'm not going
to... But there's a cheekiness and charm and it still has to be funny and well-timed. I can't deal with an hour and a half of it because anyone can do that. And then we almost do it quasi-ironically sometimes.
I'll just throw in, the Clerks animated series is incredibly good, and having seen that, I thought maybe this is animated, it might live up to the similar, but nah. So he can do animated, but this just...
I've heard that a few times, the Clerks animated series.
Really good. Sorry.
So it's got to be that, because it just sounds like something I really never want to see.
Wasn't good.
So, Steve, you vote next. You have The Perfect Host and Flintstones' Viva Rock Vegas.
Viva Rock Vegas.
I've had the pleasure of watching Viva Rock Vegas.
Why is your voice go weird?
Pleasure. I'm trying to think of another word and I couldn't. I have seen it. I.
What do you think?
I don't really remember it. Either way, if I'm completely honest, it was one of those... Oh, look, the Flintstones is on. Oh, this is the second one. I'm pretty sure it's the third one, you know, where you Sunday afternoon movie, second or third.
I'm sure it's the third. Someone will correct
it. Just happens to be on, so I have seen it, but it's not left an impact. The other one, I don't know. Sounds like something I might watch. Again, it's another vague one. It's always like you said, it's always weird when you haven't seen them, or you.
It's weird. It's like we're picking really good films and the really bad films.
I know.
All equally.
Oh my gosh. It's weird. We tend to go through a run of it.
But you've seen mine.
Yeah, and I'm afraid I'm going to have to. It didn't hold up to the original. It was a cash cow. So it's going to be the Flintstones, because the first one brought the Flintstones to the big screen. It worked for what it was, and then they just kept milking it. So it sounds like they've milked it, and from what I remember, nothing stuck with me.
Oh, it might be the sequel, actually.
So,
I always thought it was the third one. Well, hold on, what's this?
Oh, do we have a last-minute fact that's going to sway me? No,
it
okay.
said Flintstones 2015. I'm like, are they rebooting
yes,
it?
Yes, they are.
And then it said John Cena and Bill Goldberg, and I was like,
yeah.
What?
No,
really?
They're rebooting it
with John Cena. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
who was he playing?
That's the rumored. Yeah.
I hate John Cena. Goldberg's.
I was waiting on the news till it wasn't a rumor.
CM Punk's might be in it.
Yeah.
Is this WWE Studios? Daniel Bryan? Vince McMahon?
Yeah, I think it is.
Oh, when did... This is awesome. Okay.
So, yeah, it's the Flintstones until
Wells,
it, I'm
Wells
afraid.
Got in his phone. I'm not going to beat around the bush. I'm a monster, I know, but I've never liked the Flintstones in any of its forms. I just find it. I've never been a Hanna-Barbera fan. Sorry, shoot me, string me up. I don't give a fuck.
Not even Yogi?
No, they're all crap.
Huckleberry Finn?
No.
Hound, sorry. Not Huckleberry Finn. That's Tom Sawyer. Huckleberry Hound? No.
Snagglepuss.
I
wanted to say Snagglepuss.
Can't think of this. Top Cat?
I rolled my eyes when Howard Hanna-Barbera came up on screen.
Quick Draw McGraw.
Fuck Cheese McPeas. So, at least with that, I'm only Flintstones because I can't carry on. At least there's just the fingers are still in the Viewerskew universe with that. I may watch it at some point. They both sound pretty terrible to me, but now Flintstones, Viva Rock Cock, Doc, Vegas. I'm not going back to the Stone Age with a green alien and a pelican as a toilet. What's that about? That's not funny. That's horrible. That's
pelican
penalty
to as a toilet.
Do they?
They used to have a pig as a garbage disposal.
Yeah.
Because in the first one, when he gets a new garbage disposal, he just takes his pig out and chucks it away. Puts a new pig in.
Okay.
Can you imagine?
Yeah.
And then when you're showering, it's just an elephant's... trunk.
Trunk. Wonder what the pause was. An elephant.
Oh, it is what I'm showering. Down there. Isn't it?
So yeah, our decommend this week is the Flintstones Viva Rock Vegas.
It's a madness trunk.
Recommend is getting delayed. We'll have a Recommend Spectacular in 2 weeks' time. Mm-hmm. And we'll have another round of this, but also we will decide whether Jurassic Park is good in Steve's eyes.
It's time for the news. Oh, I just
came back there for a minute.
Yeah.
Throwback.
Over that one.
Throwback. I'm trying to find my news. Completely disorganised.
No.
Talk amongst yourselves.
Can you imagine at 6 o'clock?
Jeff McDonald's like, oh shit.
Fucking hell, where is it?
I've only bought.
Some really important stuff happened, but I can't remember. So after some test footage was leaked at the San Diego Comic-Con, the internet went crazy, as did we. It seems Fox have listened to the internet and we're going to get a Deadpool movie as early as February 2016.
Whoosh!
Tim Miller, the short film director, is to direct, and Ryan Reynolds is the favourite, but hasn't been confirmed. The only news we want to know now is it going to be R-rated?
There's word of it being PG, stinking, bitching
13. I expect it to be PG-13. I think that's probably the compliance they've made to make sure it happens at all. In which case, I'd rather have it PG than not have it at all. But it should be an R. And you never know, when it's like cooking on gas, maybe they can push him a bit. But the show shit power of internet and reaction. We have a voice and we can get shit happening if we care about it.
Yeah. But Steve's face summed it up for me there. Like, am I little going to be a little bit gutted if it is? He's going to be a PG-13.
Yeah. But it's saying, like, if it turned out to not be Ryan Reynolds, which is possible.
It is.
I think
it
will
be. It's not confirmed.
That would be disappointing. But by all accounts, the script sounds tossing, like Rhett Reese and what's the other one called from Zombieland? The Zombieland,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, Zombieland.
The test footage was spot on. Yeah. Let's have it.
Yeah.
2016 shaping up to be one of those years. Every couple of years is a year that really is like, I think that's the year I'm dying. Yeah. Like, do you know what I mean? It's like gearing up to
building.
2016's that year now for me.
It is, so we'll see. We'll see what happens. Matt Smith, after his recent stint as Doctor Who, has hit Hollywood after the success. He's finished filming Terminator Genesis.
Hollywood. Is Hollywood okay?
Yeah. Is it Paul Hollywood? Because he's trying to do Great British Bake Off. And then Matt Smith just walks in and smacks him.
With a quiche.
I'm going to be in a movie. Paul was like, you've got the wrong Hollywood.
No. Taking you down. He's been cast as the lead role of Pride, Prejudice and Zombies as Mr. Collins. The director, Burr Steers, who did Igby Goes Down, and it's going to start filming next week.
I think he's a good actor. I think he's got a good future. David Tennant certainly managed to put himself about since Doctor Who. It's heartening to see none of them really get typecast.
Yeah, definitely.
It's not the same as some superheroes that when people get typecast. Mm. So that heartens me.
Yeah.
Good. I'm not looking forward to Terminator Genesis, if I'm being honest.
No,
but
Pride, Prejudice and Zombies.
Oh yeah, that'd be
read
cool.
Read the book. It's worth, yeah. I mean,
I read Pride and Prejudice and I always thought what would make that great is Zombies. I don't know what Jane Austen were thinking. But you know.
Yeah, so we'll see. This one I'm looking forward to. Danger Mouse is to return to the BBC and I kind of went, But then you read on. Alexander Armstrong is to voice the iconic character. Kevin Eldon is going to do the voice of Penfold. And Dave Lamb, who does the narration on Come Dine With Me, will be the narrator.
I hate him. Every time Come Dine With Me's on, everyone tells me how great and sarcastic this narrator is, and he's just an irritating twat.
That program's horrible. I have to sit through it almost on a daily basis. It's just trash.
It is trash.
It's dribbling
trash,
diarrhea.
But the narrator...
That's how much I enjoy it.
But the narrator's always like, oh, he's making a quiche, what a twat. Let's look at him as he tries sincerely. And he's failing. He's probably a virgin. It's always stuff like that, and it's like, it's not funny, it's a bit mean, and I don't like him. I like Kevin Eldon. I don't think the project's going to go too far. It'll be like Postman Pat, the movie, I imagine. I always like Danger Master. He's Baron Greenback.
Didn't say. That's all we know.
That's all I care about.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens. Zoolander 2 is definitely happening. Will Ferrell has now been confirmed. Ben Stiller and Justin Theroux are doing the script, and Stiller is penned to direct again.
I never cared for Zoolander too much.
Oh, it's a great film.
It's okay. It has a similar, almost slightly Anchorman-ish cult following, but just never quite grabbed me the way.
No,
I don't think it's bad.
No,
it just never didn't capture me really.
No, it's one I can keep revisiting. I enjoy it.
Like most of Ben Stiller's stuff, I can watch it. Like early Adam Sandler stuff, I'm happy if it's on. But no, I don't mind Zoolander. I don't think I love it though. I don't know where I stand with it. It exists, it's fine.
Spot on.
Yeah. On the rumours of a female Ghostbusters that we've mentioned most news sections the last few weeks, Bill Murray has stepped up and said, I'm fine with it, I'd go to that movie. And they probably have better outfits too. He'd choose Melissa McCarthy, Kirsten Wiig, Linda Cardamelli and Emma Stone.
Bill Murray's the most chilled out, non-caring guy in the world.
Yeah.
Mm. So he's kind of washed his hands, really. He doesn't care.
He's just gone, guess what?
So someone's grabbed him and he's been like, oh, that sounds fine. I don't think it's going to be an all-female cast. No. I think it's a bit of, go for Bridesmaids, so it's an all-female cast.
That's it.
It shouldn't be. There should be at least one girl on the team, though.
Yeah. I agree with that, mister.
By girl, I mean woman.
Mm.
Why, I always do that though. Why do I go straight to girl? I sometimes say boy instead of man, but rarely.
No, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
No, it's true.
Is it a slip of misogyny that I don't think I have? But it's a language.
Some people don't like it.
I'm going to be more careful and say woman.
I just say thing.
Yeah, well, they are, aren't they?
Moving on! CBS Network is working on another DC character TV show in the form of Supergirl. The rumour that Superman will also have a small role.
Huh? The TV series of Supergirl?
Yep.
It's not stopping this bombardment of DC TV invasion. Teen Titans is another one that's muted to be on the way.
I've never seen the Supergirl movie. Is it as bad as they say?
I don't think I have.
She fights like a witch.
Okay. Okay. Right. Is that what, she fights like a witch? Or
it's just a low budget. Put it this way, it's better than Superman 4.
Okay.
Right. Well,
that's not hard. But
okay. No, but...
Yeah.
I think it's cool, but like most of these, it's a bit like, really? Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
So, but it's like that... That excitement, trepidatious, like, well, it's better than nothing, but that's odd.
Well, we'll take that.
Teen Titans, I'm very excited for.
Yeah.
I've always dug the Titans.
Definitely. There's rumours of a Suicide Squad as well.
That's rumoured to be a film.
Yeah, I think
it's rumoured to be one of the nine that were slated, which I think would be...
It'd be
a
really
great
idea.
It'd be
very good.
Well, they've seen how like Guardians have worked with an ensemble of new characters.
Yeah.
Then Suicide Squad, which is a comic I've always loved more in my head than when I read it.
Precisely, and you can do a bit of a Dirty Dozen aspect.
Mm.
And look how popular like Harley Quinn is. This gives you a chance to put her in front of enough. And watch Assault on Arkham, the latest DC animated film, for like hints of just how badass a live action. Suicide Squad film could be
cool.
I'd be well down. It's one of them where I didn't consider it as a possibility till it were mentioned, and I'm like, that should definitely be one of the nine. Jeremy.
Yeah, carrying on the CPA, Doctor Strange is going to begin filming in London, directed by Scott Derrickson, who did Sinister, written by John Spates, who did Prometheus, and rumours of Jacqueline Phoenix to play the lead.
So it should go.
I would be on board with all of that. It's definitely happening.
I love a lot about, again, Marvel just doing it right in terms of there's not really going to be an origins for him. He already exists in the Marvel Universe. He's had a mention, he's name checked, so he either is there.
Mm.
And they said it like, this person and Hugo Strange. And I was like, well, yeah. They didn't even go, who's Hugo Strange? It's just like, this universe is happening. But well, we don't know yet. We're only seeing glances through various windows of other superheroes.
Exactly. Yeah.
They're doing it right. They're just doing it
They don't
well.
Have to always play chronologically, as we saw with Captain America. Mm. And so it could be an origin. Because you have to introduce... like, they've already introduced the cosmic elements and... They introduce stuff with Thor and stuff, and it expands all the time. Mm. But they've still not really touched on mysticism.
Mm.
Mm.
So it's still a new layer, isn't it? So they might play it a bit safe just to sell that concept. But then Kevin Feige said, don't expect many more origins, so I don't know anymore.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, I like the fact that, no, we don't need origins now, we've been gifted, we're in that world.
It depends if the story naturally lends itself to an origin, but too many set out to do an origin, almost like that's the only way to play it. When it's there's really a million other ways. Just chuck us in there.
Already, though, but with Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver, we've kind of had their origin now. They've been kept in boxes and under the ground for a while.
Because apart from the big boys, which we all can recite their origin, your average person knows those origins.
Mm.
They're not that interesting by the whole.
Mm.
After about list five or six or seven origins, after that you're like, that were an accident, and they were born that way, and that were a thing.
Yeah. It just reminded me of a bit in Super Groovy Cartoon Movie that did make me laugh. There was a bit where some toxic waste went down a drain and the turtles, and Kevin Smith popped up, and he pops up in his little hockey jersey and goes, by the way, folks, and he's like, turtles originated in the sewers from Fig. There's a couple of little nice bits in it, but it just didn't hold up. We've mentioned Suicide Squad. They've identified a director, David Ayer, who did End of Watch and Sabotage, and the producer, Don Lynn, who did the Lego movie, are going to be attached to it.
I wanted to see both those films and watched neither.
End of Watch is good.
It's a bit of a theme with me at the minute.
It's worth seeing.
Sounds good. I think that could be uber cool.
Yeah,
definitely. Japanese director Takeshi Miike is going to receive a Maverick Director Award at the upcoming Rome Film Festival. His sense of cinema and the pleasure of filming were already evident in his earliest works. They've effortlessly edged in despite his current creative speed. He makes 3 or 4 films a year, hence his style continues to assert itself each time. He's done over 100 films spanning family horror and thriller.
Mm.
He's got a new film coming out called As the Gods Will that, unfortunately, has been described as the Japanese Hunger Games with more blood.
Isn't that Battle Royale?
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, Takeshi Miike, if you maybe... Yeah.
That's how an idiot would describe Battle Royale. It really is.
But yeah.
Cool.
It's getting a...
I've only seen, like, 2 of his films, but I really like what I did see. Mm. So... I've not seen his well-known, though, interesting.
No, just to be honest, I think that's a good... And it's a film festival, I don't know, the Rome Film Festival, I don't know much about it.
Yeah, again, I'm with Scott, I mean, I've appreciated a lot of his works, but I've never delved in headfirst. I did know that he does churn them out, though.
Mm.
But he's good, so...
Yeah.
Well done.
And then... News was a bit thin on the ground, as you can tell, this week. But the lastly, remember when Shia LaBeouf plagiarised all the things in December last year? Well, apparently now he's living in fear of a woman who's convinced he's discovered the theory of relativity. A woman so deranged that she threatened to blow his house up. She showed up on his driveway eating watermelons and said, "I'm going to blow up your house, I'm going to blow up the world. You are Albert Einstein and we belong together."
Now, and is that any more crazy than what he's been doing?
Well... This is it.
This is the twist on the story, though. It's him.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a Tyler Durden.
Yeah. He's dressed as, yeah.
She could just call that art, and it's not far off what he's been doing.
Mm. Yeah.
To be honest, he'd probably borrow that for a short film soon. So.
Yeah. It's just the crazy world of Shia LaBeouf.
But the third character is Albert Einstein, so.
Yeah.
There's multi layers.
Yeah, why does she think he's.
I have no idea. Apparently, that's what the story says. Is she thinks he's Einstein
because it's a fact he didn't. No amount of sort of delusion would suddenly convince you.
Well, it's one of these when that's featuring on quite a few news sites as one of the top stories. You're like, news is definitely slow.
Yeah.
The fact that I've brought it with us as the 10th story.
I don't know. It's like a mawkish. It's a mawkish car crash. I LaBeouf now, so it doesn't surprise me. It's a story, which is a shame because he's picked a lot of shit films, Transformers. And in the E4 in particular, but like Lawless showed me, he could potentially have been a good actor, but he's obviously a bit of a dick.
just got derailed by the Hollywood train. So yeah, that is the news. Unless you guys have got any more.
No. Well, I mentioned I was going to do a list, and then Scott demanded I do a kiss list, so I did a kiss list.
Yay!
It's not the main thing I was going to bring, but I'll do it quickly now, Front Street. Kiss list, easy. Number 1, Emma Stone. I think we'll all agree.
Yeah.
Jane Levy, number 2.
Yeah.
Isla Fisher, number 3. Bit of a theme there.
Yeah.
Rebecca Hall. Now, I watched The Awakening the other day, which is a very good film.
Yeah.
And I thought she looked very, very good actress, first and foremost. Great performance with Dominic West, but she looked very kissable. Lauren WK, she's a model, she's nice.
Okay.
Brody Dahl, Distillers, very good.
Okay.
Mary Elizabeth Winstead, very nice lady. And then that led me to Ramona Flowers, who is the character. It's probably the only character I would kiss if I could. Billy Ray Cyrus. So just to thank him for what he produced.
Yeah.
And
finally,
Scott Inkson.
Yes! Yay! Yes! I was leaving.
He's on the list. He was up. He was off.
There he is. I was scared for a minute there.
There he is.
I was doing Intensity.
Incidentally, we'd have very similar lists, I think.
Yeah.
Out of interest.
What I actually wanted to do today was it's his birthday week, and instead of going like, Steve's birthday, what's your favourite film? I thought I'd actually look at the year you were born.
Oh, crikey.
So we're going to have a
look. So 1927.
There weren't many out that year.
It's actually 1978.
Indeed it is.
The year of nearly the end of the 70s.
Yeah. Yeah.
Punk was in its height.
But I thought I'd just do 10 minutes on a year, you know. Oh, nice. Incidentally, you share a birthday with John Woo and Mickey Rooney.
Nice.
Yeah.
Like that.
Mickey Rooney.
So you might have an affinity for doves flying into the camera.
Yeah, flying in slow motion.
And then you also might go insane.
happy with both.
The big film, the one that got the highest rating on IMDb for the year, is Deer Hunter. Have we watched Deer Hunter?
Yes.
No. I watched Cheap Hunter.
Mm. Bargain Hunter.
Bargain Hunter.
Oh, yeah. Hey. Finished my joke. No, I never have, actually. It's quite a biggie on my omit list.
It's a good film, actually. Unbelievably. You know,
I'm shocked to hear.
No, it's good. Very.
Christopher Walken, playing a role I've never seen him play in that sense, you know, it's very different for him, I found.
It's one of them that's so sort of been. It's become very identifiable and parodied and part of popular culture, so I know an incredible amount about it, having not seen it. Mm. Just like the Russian roulette scenes.
Yeah,
and
it's not an easy watch.
No. Steve loves these series of films, and actually, they were done before. Lord of the Rings, the animated version, came out in 1978.
Yeah. Did it?
It was supposed to be a trilogy, but I don't think it fared very well.
Stayed after the... They didn't go past the first one.
No.
Yeah. So it's a shame, because everyone seems to remember them fondly.
I've never seen it, if I'm honest.
I watched it as a kid, but my memory of it is, like, disjointed.
Saw some of it not long ago, last year, and wasn't blown away.
No. Well, what a surprise.
I'm shocked.
But
you're a big fan of Middle Earth, aren't you?
I am.
I'm gonna try tenuously 6 degrees this now.
Okay.
I haven't thought this through, I'm just gonna try.
So are these the top, are these in order, are these like
are
the top releases? Or just some of the
some of the biggest films out that year.
Okay.
I'm going to go with animation, actually one of Steve's favouritest films. Another animation came out that year. Watership Down.
Yeah.
A world of ruthless tyranny and brave rebellion.
I'll settle with you myself, bigwig.
Come on and try, you crack-brained slave driver.
The horrific tale of bunny slaughter.
Yes, not the nicest of films.
But what's the song in it?
Bright Eyes.
A kind of dream?
I thought it were Bright Eyes.
Yeah.
Starting, is that part of it?
Starting off the
Sorry. I'm
starting it off.
Oh. Every now and then I fall apart.
I need you now tonight.
Fucking need you more than ever.
That were that one.
That's yeah, it, yeah. As the rabbits are running across the field.
Defo.
So blood and horrible. Disgusting.
But such powerful. I think I love it just because of the imagery. It's just such a powerful. Powerful. I tailed off then, sorry. But no, just incredibly powerful imagery in it. And I mean, it is just. For a film about rabbits, Jesus Christ, it's.
Sorry, it's just, I'm ruining your point.
Is it your favourite rabbit film?
There's Roger Rabbit.
Exactly, so it'd be wrong if it was. It's Roger Rabbit.
No, great.
It goes Roger Rabbit, Space Jam, Watership Down.
No, I'd put Watership Down over Space Jam.
Fuck off!
Next!
we talked briefly last week when we were talking Mad Max, how cinema around this time was changing. We were seeing the beginning of the video nasties coming in, big changes in how horror was being in the 70s. It was one of the most defining decades for the genre, kicking off the 80s splatterfest. But anyway, we had Halloween.
We did.
This is Halloween.
I spent 8 years trying to reach him. And then another 7 trying to keep him locked up because I realized that what was living behind that boy's eyes was purely and simply evil.
The slasher thing.
Just so strong. The music, the look, just the format that was copied and is still copied, you know?
Yeah, it's been used so much.
So brilliant. Another big horror film came out that year, Dawn of the Dead. Romero returned to the Dead series. I think it was, how long, 10 years, 11 years after his Night of the Living Dead? That
must have been.
In itself shows how much horror changed and what they could do. Mm. You'd gone from people being gobsmacked in the cinema in Night of the Living Dead, seeing these people eating entrails, these zombies eating entrails. Yeah. And now in Dawn of the Dead, it's just go, and all of it, you know.
Go.
Definitely. And I mean, I enjoyed the remake of Dawn of the Dead all the years later, reboot. I still enjoy that as a modern comparison to it. It worked. It brought it.
I think it's not a scratch on it.
No, but it brought
not
it.
Not an infested scratch.
I don't compare or have a preference, but I do think they complement each other.
Yeah, definitely.
It certainly does herald in a new era of how zombie films are being taken.
Yes.
It's not too offensive. Talking of offensive, while this horror was happening in that area, the gore was getting bigger, also pushing boundaries with things like Last House on the Left and things. What came out this year was I Spit in Your Grave, another one of these rape horror films.
I don't like women giving me orders.
I spit on your grave.
They're a bit nasty, really, aren't they? I'm a horror fan, but I'm never comfortable watching. But that's the whole point of horror.
Yeah.
By definition, it's supposed to horrify you. And these ones really do. I don't enjoy watching them. I feel uncomfortable. Yeah. Their exploitation in a nasty way.
Yeah, incredibly graphic and almost just not good. Why Hollywood felt the need to revisit that and just sort of felt a little bit like...
I always love when people refer to it as Hollywood. In a really derogatory way, like, fucking Hollywood.
Fucking Hollywood.
You're just running over to Paul Hollywood.
Yeah.
Are you?
Yo,
put the keys
why
on
did
your
you
back.
Do it?
It just gets all the stick.
It's a form of short.
Alaska.
It's a form of shorthand for having a go at the studio heads who decide it might be good.
The collective.
Hollywood's quite crummy, I can report.
Yeah.
All the people aren't in Hollywood. Hollywood is a ruin of what it was, I'm sure. Some areas are nice. West Hollywood's nice. Yeah. Moving on. There were a couple more fishy-based horrors as well. Okay. Piranha.
Oh.
And Jaws 2.
Jaws 2?
Jaws 2.
Oh, cranky.
Yeah. But moving away from that, we went comedy. Animal House was the big comedy of the year. Toga.
Definitely.
There was a massive geek.
Superman the movie.
Mm.
Because of the wisdom and compassion of Jor-El, because he knew the human race had the capacity for goodness, he sent us his only son. His name is Kal-El. He will call himself Clark Kent. But the world will know him as Superman.
Apart from the Batman 60s film based on the TV show, it's the first feature-length superhero film.
Is it really? That's amazing.
Nice.
And I still think it needs to be in any conversation about the best. Even though some of it's still kitsch, and obviously some of it doesn't hold up, and it's not quite how I want my Superman. Mm. It's that was Superman for 40 years. That's the public perception of Superman for that long. It's huge, and it's kind of the basis so many other superhero films have jumped from, including Batman and Spider-Man, and which have subsequently influenced all these other things.
And 36 years later, we're swimming in films and TV series.
I get why not everyone likes Superman, but you've got he's got it right. He's the godfather. There's a genetic term for the originator that's escaped me.
Yeah.
He's the godfather.
That's awesome.
He needs respect, and the films
are different. I hadn't realised that about Superman. Okay.
Although, I still hate the end. Fucking hate it. I can't suspend my disbelief with it whatsoever. Fucking flying around the earth and rotating it backwards to turn around. It's fucking stupid.
That's how all of his films from then could have been ended.
You could say it's representative of what was happening, and I know Einstein says a certain amount of you could travel backwards. You could defend it if you really want. It just looks stupid and undermines a good film.
The Wiz also came out, the weird Wizard of Oz
film.
Oh,
the strange Wizard of Oz, yeah.
But we'll skip over that. Also, one of my favourite in a spurt of in the 70s, you had, well, I think it was the 60s, was Easy Rider. Then you had Vanishing Point. We had the truck version, Convoy. Love that film.
I got a great big convoy.
We gonna be number.
Still, it's a trashy 70s throwaway film, but it's so referenced still to this day.
Yeah.
And finally, I thought we'd finish because I think you two like it. I hate it with burning passion.
Okay.
It's one of my 1 out of 10 films.
Oh, Grease.
Grease.
Yeah, I got chills. I can't stand it. I can't stand it. Grease 2 is marginally better, but no, Grease is
cool.
Awful. No.
But it involves singing, so Scott's there with bells on.
I don't mind a singing film, but no. Can't. I think the Grease Megamix has a lot to answer for.
I don't think the cash-in Megamix for toy CDs is Grease the film's fault.
Put it off.
I just see slightly pudgy middle-aged women on the dance floor being wacky, dancing.
But again, that's people ruining it. Film's fault. It's just how it's been embraced.
I think it's just my mother. Mother issues.
Fair enough.
But yeah, 1978. That was your year in cinema.
Interesting year of films as well. I'd not realised the Superman thing. Was it? Mm-hmm.
That's what you've got to be proud
pretty
of.
Pretty cool. I like it.
Well done, Steve, for being born.
Thank you kindly. I got chills, they're multiplying, and I'm losing control, 'cause the power you're supplying,
it's electrifying. And now we're going to talk to Andrew Sayer, who is telling us all about his project, the song The Zombie Sang.
What does the zombie say?
Today we welcome Andrew Sayer to the Weekly Geek Speak podcast. Welcome to Weekly Geek Speak.
Thank you for having me.
Before anything else, can you tell us a little about you and how you became a filmmaker and what you've created to date?
I'm from New Hampshire, northeastern United States. Grew up there, and probably ever since I was about maybe 12 or 15 years old or somewhere in there, I always wanted to make films. Something about the medium's always spoken to me. Something about working in films has always appealed to me. I guess my mind just sort of works that way. I guess it makes the way films work makes sense to me that way. So I went to school for it at Keene State College in New Hampshire, got my film degree. For 14 years previous to now, I was living in Boston, active in the film scene there. While I was there, I made a few shorts of my own. I also made a feature-length film called Whatever Makes You Happy. And recently I've moved to New York to continue on this. And starting last year, I've been working to put together this film project that we're going to be talking about in a moment, The Song the Zombie Sang, which is based on a short story by Harlan Ellison and Robert Silverberg, two fairly well-known speculative fiction fantasy writers.
Moving on to the film that you're crowdfunding at the moment, it's a very interesting concept. Can you tell us a little about it?
The story basically evolves around two characters. Basically, both the characters are on the same sort of path of life, same sort of journey, just at different ends. On the one hand, you have the famous, iconic music composer named Niels Beck, who, he's had a long career, incredibly famous musician, and he's so iconic and famous that even after he has died, through technology, they bring him back and reanimate him for 4 hours a night to re-perform his famous work for, sold-out crowds at opera houses all across the world. He's basically the zombie that sang.
Yeah.
And on the other end of it is you have character Rhoda, who is a very young woman, probably 19 or 20, something like that, who is a musical prodigy, is probably just about every bit as good as Rhoda is, as Beck is. As far as musical talent, but she has no recognition. She doesn't have a name for it. Nobody knows how good she is yet. And most of the story is following her as she struggles on her end to try to get the kind of recognition that she sees in someone like Beck.
Mm.
And leads to, at the end of the story, at the end of the film, her confronting Beck one night after a particular crushing setback in her career, and sort of just going at him and just basically, you know, you're sucking all the air out of the room. I can't get any recognition because everybody keeps fawning over you type of attitude.
Yeah, the story, as he's mentioned earlier, is by Harlan Ellison and Robert Silverberg. What attracted you to this story and these authors, and what makes you want to make this into a film?
Well, that's a good one. I first read this story back in high school when I was probably no more than 18 or 19 years old. I had this thing where every once in a while I'll read and I'll come across someone who I'm so enamored by their work that I'll just literally read every single thing I can possibly find within a 100-mile radius of wherever I'm standing.
Hmm.
And I'll go through almost everything that they've written. And I found Harlan Ellison around this time, and that's what happened as I fell so in love with his stories and his writing. And this one has always stuck with me ever since. One of the things, I guess this is something a lot of filmmakers agree with me that they do too, is but anytime I read something, I always think about how I would make it into a story if I ever got how I'd make it into a film if I ever got the opportunity.
Yeah.
And obviously, I mean, it's just something I do with everything I read. Most of the time, it never even gets the notions of how I would do it never even last beyond me reading the story because, for whatever reason, it wouldn't work right.
Mm.
This one, I read it, you know, thought that while I was reading it, and it's been in my head for the last 20 years, and I've just been playing with it. Thinking it was one of those stories that I always wanted to do someday. And through, you know, a strange set of circumstances, I actually, starting last year about this time, I actually found myself with the opportunity of being able to make it. Mm. And it's a strange set of circumstances. The thing about this story that I love so much is the idea of struggling with this creative pursuits.
Mm.
Which I think is something that a lot of people can understand. I mean, even if you're not something specifically creative, any kind of pursuit that you go along that takes up a lot of your time, a lot of your attention, and the sacrifices you have to make to achieve your goal is what I think is my favorite idea that I get out of this story, which I'm hoping I get through as well as I can through the script that I've written.
The story is so focused on these two characters, Niles Beck and Rhonda. They seem very special. Is there something that attracted you to these two in particular? As a filmmaker, did you connect with them?
Yeah, I mean, I think I identify in some way or other, at least I like to think I do, with each one of them for various different reasons. I mean, at the stage I'm at my own particular career right now, I mean, I can identify with Rhoda's struggle very, very strong, very keenly. And even on the other end of it, the thing about Beck is I identify with him even on the other end of it, as in the work that he does or the performances that he puts on. He doesn't feel he has anybody who can really be honest with him about what the quality of his work is.
Mm.
And that's one of the things that's always been tricky whenever it comes to like writing or creating anything. Finding criticism that you can rely on.
Mm.
And I'm not just saying people saying nice things about, you know, if I want people to say nice things about the things I write, I'll let nobody read about my mother.
Mm.
You know, he's surrounded by all these people who he doesn't know, he can't have any faith in what anybody around him thinks. And he feels kind of trapped in this pursuit, even as his particular existence at the time of the story isn't all that great. I mean, literally, he's reanimated for 4 hours. He does a concert, glad hands with a bunch of people, and then he gets put right back under. So he doesn't actually have any type of life outside of his performances. Mm. He continues going with them. So, I mean, it's empathizing with things in a science fiction or speculative fiction story is not exactly as straight of the line as it normally would in a more conventional story, but I feel like I empathize with that type of feelings that he has at some point. At least, as to be a good writer, I try to.
The music in the promo video that I watched, where you talk about it on your Kickstarter campaign, the music is very striking, and this orchestral kind of music really is, and really adds to a film. Do you feel that the music is like the third character, or do you feel like Niles Beck has become the music in a sense?
The music is definitely going to be a third character. The quality of the music that the both of them are, because there's points of their own particular compositions that are talked about in the story and that you actually hear in the film itself, and it's going to be very important to have the highest quality. That piece of music, incidentally, it was Tchaikovsky's Sixth Symphony, the first movement. I believe it's called Pathetique. That's the kind of music. I don't really like the movie soundtrack type of music. I like quality music in a film, and it's going to be very, very important to find the best compositions I can possibly find.
Yeah.
To think of a contemporary, I think of something like Fresnier's music in Kieslowski's Three Colors trilogy. Would be the quality of music that if I got seriously lucky, I'd be able to find. Actually, the first one in that I feel is going to be very influential in the way I'm going to be making this movie.
Yeah.
Blue is one of my favorite films.
Yeah. It's really interesting, this dynamic between the character and the music itself. In your terms of your filmmaking, you're thinking of being very focal on these elements with little else, or are you going to look a bit further into the world, or keep the sci-fi to a minimum?
This is a specific kind of sci-fi story. First off, it's probably what you would call soft science fiction, or even speculative fiction, which I think would probably be even more appropriate way to describe it. The technology is there, but it's not about how the technology works. You're not getting into sort of like technobabble. I mean, you're not having anything as complex as, say, Larry Niven's Ringworld or anything like that. But it's there for the thematic purpose behind it.
Yeah.
There's going to be a certain, but the other thing about this one that on top of that is this is more of a near future, it's sort of like something that you could see happening in maybe 30 years time.
Yeah.
For a certain reason, it's the future, but it's not really that far. It's not, it's like 20 years in the future or 10 years in the future. Things are generally the same as they are now, with a few little things here and there. Maybe a lot more flashing lights and holographic advertising in the sky. Little things like that would probably be the extent of it. There's not going to be like spaceships flying around in the sky.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to be dressed in a one-piece, sleek, vital leotard or whatever Buck Rogers was wearing.
Yeah.
There's not going to be anything like that. There are a lot of science fiction stories that work this way. I mean, it's more in the fiction and not so much in the films. You don't see it too much in films. I have a hard time thinking of any examples of this kind of near future instead of future story. The only one I've ever been able to think up off the top of my head is maybe Max Headroom back in the TV show from the 80s.
Yeah.
Was a near future story. I mean, this isn't anything like Max Headroom. I should be clear about that. Maybe Gattaca, but it's been a very long time since I've seen Gattaca, so I couldn't really speak to that as certainly.
Maybe Her as well, that came out last year. That's quite a near future one which experiments in that kind of area. Anyway, with regards to the project, it's now crowdfunding, aren't you? You've got a campaign. Can you tell us a little about the campaign, what you're wanting and what you're offering in return for people pitching money in?
Well, the campaign's been running for over a month now. Our goal is spend $200,000 in the campaign. We have certain perks that we've been offering. We've been offering anything from the lowest perk of $1, a special thank you note, and a digital copy of the movie poster, the campaign movie poster, to other nicer things. I have in there a link so people can watch my last film, my last feature length film, Whatever Makes You Happy, for free. With their donation to the campaign, obviously, digital copy of the script, so people can read that. The nice one that I really think is going to be the nice perk is one of the things I'm going to be making is I'm going to be making a printed version of the script, with 8 or 9 illustrations to go along with it, and packaging that together in sort of a graphic novel format. with a nice cover, a nice little introduction by myself, thanking everybody for their contributions. And then there's the scripts and some in the illustrations that of things going on in the story at that particular time. That's a perk. I actually really am looking forward to putting that perk together, because the way I see it in my brain, I have a friend who's actually been working on some sketches for various pictures to put into it, and they're coming. I've seen a few of them, and they look really nice. And I'm really excited to see how it's going to turn out, because if it turns out even half as good as I think it could, it's going to be really a nice little gift that people can have.
Yeah, well, there's some great perks on offer there. Finally, if you just want to tell our listeners directly why this film needs to be made and why they should put their money in.
It's a hard one to answer. Yeah. It's always the hardest. It's like that's one of the. It's sort of a variation on the question. It's always been difficult for me of why did you write this story? I mean, where did the idea come from? It's like I really don't know where the idea comes from. If I knew where the idea comes from, this writing wouldn't be so hard. But this particular film is the embodiment of what is best in science fiction and speculative fiction. The kind of story that you don't get to see too much these days, because as much as I like things like Guardians of the Galaxy or, you know, any of the comic book science fiction or any of the science fiction films that are out there, there's some awfully good ones. They're not as thoughtful as science fiction is when it's at its best.
Yeah.
They're not as, for lack of a better way of saying it, artistic. And science fiction is truly at its best. And I have a great foundation here of a story by Harlan Ellis and Robert Silverberger, two of the best writers going as far as fantasy, science fiction, speculative fiction. They've been that way for probably 30 years now. And this is the kind of film that I think a lot of people would love to see. I can only assume that. I mean, it's a film that I would love to see. I would absolutely love to see it. Even if I, you know, if something happens and this never goes through, I would love it if somebody else would pick it up and do it themselves, because this is a really good story. And it speaks to things in every single person. I mean, in this story, the pursuit is music. And the obsession is with music. But the obsession is the kind of thing that anybody who has a goal can understand and empathize with. You know, it doesn't even have to be creative. This is the same kind of obsession and the same type of drive that people feel towards getting a promotion. Like the unpaid intern who works 60 hours a week and just eyeing her boss's desk inside corner office.
Yeah.
Or, you know, the unpaid intern on the film running around getting everybody coffee and taking crap from everybody. But the whole time knowing that they're doing this for a purpose and giving up so much of their social life and their personal life for the kind of crazy hours that they deal with just to be able to be in that director's chair someday.
Yeah.
Again, that's something creative, but I think it's a universal type of feeling. It's a universal idea.
Yeah. Well, where can we find out more about the project? Where can you direct us to?
You can find the Indiegogo's campaign page if you type in a search on Indiegogo for the song The Zombie Sang. But beyond that, for something even more direct, you can go to the film's website, zombiesong.com, all one word, and you'll be able to find all the information regarding the campaign and the film in general.
Good stuff. Well, it sounds thoroughly unique, and you sound like the right person to be on board and the right person to be pushing this, because you sound exceedingly passionate about it. Reading about it today, it certainly strikes my chord. I'm a big sci-fi fan, so I really hope you get funding. We'll throw out the links and everything, and I really encourage our listeners to throw some money in there. Thank you so much for joining us today, Andrew.
Thank you very much.
It's been a pleasure talking to you, and good luck.
And good luck. I just want one little thing. Even though the goal seems very high, even if I don't, I just want to make it very clear to everyone. Even if I do not approach this goal, there is no way I'm going to stop. I'm going to keep trying to make this film until someone tells me I can't anymore, and then I'll probably still do it for another 2 weeks after that.
As the train rolls in to the end of the show, the last stop before you get off for another week and miss us.
Oh.
But we always have treats for the geeks at the end.
Oh, weekly treats.
I feel like he's stalling, like he doesn't know what's coming next. So he's like, and
we've got a weekly.
And soon.
Then. And then. And then.
We've and arrived then. At the Bumpy Goose book. I revealed to my sister that I read these. So I believe she might be listening. So
okay.
I better behave.
Did you tell her they've caught people's imaginations?
Yeah, she just thought she didn't understand why.
Has she not read them? They're brilliant.
They're amazing.
But I think she finds it quite funny. I'm covering the image on this one because the image kind of gives it away a little bit.
Right.
But the reading is The Thing with Pointy Ears.
The Thing with Pointy Ears.
The Thing with Pointy Ears, right, okay.
Oh, by the way, Bumpy Goose is a book written by myself and my sister. That's what that one was about. We wrote it when we were children. They're silly, scary stories influenced by Goosebumps, believe it or not. Mm.
The very serious, scary stories.
Yes.
The Thing with Pointy Ears. Zazaka Guliman. I like that.
That's a good name.
Yeah. It says everything about how many we've read that I don't have the energy anymore. It's just like, weird name.
Zazaka Guliman.
Zazaka Guliman weirdly works.
Not as good as Tom Sticky Notey.
No, Tom Sticky Notey was having a nightmare about the killer slug of Mikan Menaranarana Parabara Willy.
Where's that?
I think you read it really well.
A point that on a map. Oh, you mean just off Stevenage?
That's it. Northeast.
I've been there.
To give my geography skills. Suddenly he woke up.
Well.
Yeah. He stared out of the window. He saw a weird monster sitting on a log.
There's always just like a leap. It's never, it never builds you up into this like... And then he went downstairs and turned the corner.
Oh, why?
Suddenly,
why?
A body. It's always like... And then a doctor, then a frog on a log with a teacup said, where's your juice?
Why have all the pretense? Let's get to the point.
Yeah, let's chuck this straight in.
He woke up, he looked out the window, he saw a thing.
There's a monster on the log.
It had pointy ears.
What other details did it have?
It was massive, brackets, about 30 centimetres tall. Massive or what?
That feels like he's trying to convince himself. Well, that's big, right? That's normal.
Trying to lure the listeners into readers.
How much is 30 centimetres?
The give ruler's length.
12 inches.
So it's the size of a ruler.
Yeah.
12 inches. Massive. How could he see him out the window if he's that big?
I don't know. If you had one of them waving towards you, you'd think it was big.
Well, it'd be big until somewhere it was obscured or hidden.
the next morning... The next morning, he asked his cousin Pong Pong.
Pong Pong Guliman.
Pong Pong. Pong Pong Guliman.
I like to think that was his nickname. Like one of those daft nicknames, like one day he just played Pong. He played Pong while smelling. So everyone started calling him Pong Pong.
There was a guy at my school who was rather smelly and lanky, and we called him John John Stinks.
As funny as it is. John Stinks. I can imagine that like eureka moment of I've got the perfect name.
Yeah. What is the name of the weird thing that sat on the log last night?
Who's he talking to?
Pong Pong.
Oh.
Pong
Pong. He's telling Pong Pong.
So Zaka Gulim is asking Pong Pong what
30 centimetres creature sat on the log. Oh, right,
but Pong Pong did not know.
Oh. Well, why would he? He wasn't looking.
No. Know. And now the big reveal, I'm going to slide the thing
down. Oh, my God, what's happened?
Read the final line, please.
Zazaka looked in the encyclopedia and found out it was a cat. It was the picture. It's the best picture ever.
See what I mean? Kind of ruins it.
Look at the picture.
I think we'll leave it at that.
I
think that's delivered.
Oh dear.
It's the face cat.
It's amazing. Oh dear.
Oh, Stephen, what time is it?
It's time to recollect ourselves. It's time for this week. The geeks have spoken.
I'd just like to play out before we do this. I have been listening to the Pod Pals group, which we are akin to. In particular, ABH podcast. I did give them a nice shout out last week.
I listened to them the other day as well. Very good.
They are good. It got edited out because the volume on my mic disappeared for a moment. So I'll say this: they're a great podcast, and we've been interacting with them. So it's been great listening, and they've given us a shout out as well. HOM at HOM podcast, History of Misunderstanding as well, and their latest show. We feature saying goodbye to JT Movie Podcast with them. Also, Robbie Polanco was on at Robbie_Polanco. Thanking for the birthday message, we left. So do listen to both those podcasts. Thank you for the shout outs and the mentions, or thank you for including us in what you do.
Yeah.
Also, we're referred to as the Weekly Geeks.
Are we?
Yeah.
Oh, hey. We finally got a band name.
I think it's funny because of all the moaning had about the Weekly Geeks.
because I knew it should be other. We can't do it. Other people have to call us something.
Mm.
But it weren't happening. It took ages.
Well, we now are the Weekly Geeks. Hey,
That's all I wanted. Although, not that weak.
I know
you'd have some problem. I've got decent upper body strength. But yeah, it's fine. Can't be perfect, can it?
Thank you, as always, for your interactions, reviews, tweets, praise, and otherwise. Pete Bushbauer, king of three-word reviews, at Popular Outcasts. Thanks, as always. A lot. I've picked a few. Filth, McAvoy is phenomenal. 8 out of 10. Yeah, I think I gave it a 7. I did really enjoy it.
Filth. It was fine. Just wasn't anything special for me.
Mm.
But then I'm a grumpy bastard, so.
Oculus, twisty, creepy horror. 7 out of 10.
I thought the trailer looked terrible, but you know, I haven't seen the film, and hopefully it will be good because I am longing for a good Hollywood blockbuster horror to come out.
I'd quite like to see it.
Is it about a fabulous octopus?
Mm.
Yeah. Fabulous.
About Karen Gillan's fabulous octopus.
Oh, I remember we previewed the trailer, didn't we?
We did, yeah. The trailer trashed it. He visited the Skyline Indie Film Festival in Winchester, Virginia last weekend. And I think from the reviews I've picked out, the highlight was Before I Disappear, Find Your Worth, 9 out of 10. Mm. I've just looked it up. And it's a drama. At the lowest point of his life, Richie gets a call from his sister asking him to look after his 11-year-old niece, Sophia, for a few hours.
Mm.
Sounds interesting. But yeah, Find Your Worth, 9 out of 10.
Cool.
That's a powerful film, yeah. At Hollow Spy... saw Lucy. Needless visuals. Disappointed. 5 out of 10.
That's a shame. Yeah. But then again, Besson can be a little like that sometimes.
It doesn't surprise me to hear it. I still think I'll watch it.
Mm.
Mm. Lauren at L Ride said the incredible Burt Wonderstone. Shite of hand. 3 out of 10.
Great three-word review, though.
Yeah. I've not seen it.
It's about right. It's okay. It's exactly the film you imagine it is.
Right.
Okay. So
we're shite. No one's going to review it overly favourably, but I weren't particularly offended by it.
Okay, fair enough. Michael Saborin at The Flickist, referring to the conversation we had in episode 69, awkward, weird sex. All the sex in History of Violence was uncomfortable, brackets literally in the case of the stairs.
Definitely, yeah.
Not seen.
It's just a strong... spontaneous sex scene on some stair, and there's also one when she's in cheerleader uniform. There's a lot of weird sex in it. It's a great film though.
We're seeing.
It's my favourite Cronenberg. No, the fly popped in my head. I went, ooh, no, it's not.
It's been dripping.
That and The Fly are my favourite Cronenberg films.
I'll give it a watch because I haven't seen it either.
No, I'm not. We mentioned Doctor Strange shooting in London. At Rex Everything 3 said, is it too late to persuade them I should be soccer supreme?
Sorcerer.
Sorcerer? Did I spell that wrong?
Yeah.
Soccer Supreme.
I did wonder what Soccer Supreme meant.
He wants to be Sorcerer Doctor Supreme. Strange, who's called the Sorcerer Supreme.
I read it and thought I'm missing out on something here.
He wants to be really good at football.
I thought there was this random character that I've missed out on that's awfully British and in Doctor Strange.
Doctor Strange is a man with a football game. I'm Soccer Supreme!
Woohoo! I wouldn't put it past some random Marvel character.
True.
It was a bizarre football-playing Brit.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Can't remember him misspelling it, so you must have read it properly.
I've read it wrong on two occasions because I wrote it and then copied it into this book. So, yeah.
Wow.
Whoops, sorry.
Soccer Supreme.
Sorry, Rex, everything.
I'm sorry. He's not done a mistake like this since Harry Potter and the soccer stone.
Oh, there was the soccer as a suspended apprentice as well.
Yeah. He's got a bit of a history of...
ballsing it up. That's quite Andy at Steel Taylord in response to the Deadpool news, because we tweeted it as well. Just put fangirl heavy breathing and peeing.
That's pretty much what my reaction was. And a general sense of we've done it. It felt like we'd done it. Whoever leaked it did it.
Yeah.
But like it just really shows you that they listen. Like if enough of you want something, it will be.
Yeah, definitely. Freya at Run Roller Run said, "Dear at Stuntman Psych, shonky is not a Steve word, it's just a word from Australia."
Fair dues.
Apparently.
They're claiming everything nowadays, these Australians. I think it's a Steve word to me.
Well, I think it's more of a, they only say it in some weird country down under. I did that just for a reaction, and now I sit back and wait.
He's still angry about watching Mad Max.
At the Flickist, Road Warrior, Mad Max 2's title when I was younger is miles above Mad Max. Beyond Thunderdome is kind of awful.
I wanted to watch it in time for this recording and I have been ultra busy, but I promise I will watch the Road Warrior to try and dispel...
I watched it. It would have been my recommend, but I didn't want to bring up Mad Max again 2 weeks in a row, but I watched it and I love it. It's still...
Well, I expect a big improvement, because I'm pretty sure that's the film everyone loves, and that's why it's quite a beloved franchise.
Yeah.
Yes. I have to admit, I haven't touched Beyond Thunderdome since I first watched it about 10 years ago, so...
The idea of Tina Turner running around in a
just
film.
The idea of Tina Turner.
Yeah. I think it's years of it. Is that your auntie?
Yeah. Who would you rather have than Tina Turner?
I don't know.
Exactly, she's simply the best.
Hey.
Oh,
hey. Tina Turner jokes. I'm very tired.
You're reaching the Nutbush City limit of jokes.
I felt like
there,
that were low for me. That
Nutbush City limit. I just think of her hairy nutsack.
Yeah.
Standing at the edge of the city, thumbing a ride with his hairy balls out. Nutbush!
Well,
it's an image for
I can't it? Listen to that song again.
Moving swiftly on, a man of many names, Roy Keane's beard at Sparky Wright, said the last Bumpy Goose was a twist worthy of M. Night Shyamalan. I could never fucking say it.
Shyamalan, which is also Tina Turner's alternate name.
It's pronounced M. Night Sorcerer.
In Night Soccer.
It's Shyamalan.
Shyamalan. Hashtag make of that what you will.
I take it you guys haven't seen Roy Keane's beard.
No.
It's a particularly impressive fuzz.
Okay.
You must have heard his name before.
I don't. You know, this is me we're talking about. Come on.
can't even remember how you mispronounced
it. I don't know.
Shemalian.
I'm sure there's a supercut of all the times I've mentioned it in the news.
I'm going to make sure every recommendee friend has got an M. Night Shyamalan film, and I'll be like, who directed it, Steve? Can't remember.
Shimmer Shabba Shag.
Oh, M. Night Scuba did it.
Just like scatting.
M. Night Shabba!
M. Night Scuba Dooba Dooba.
Doctor Who aired, and you shared us your thoughts as always. Ace Heartbreaker at Madam Vortex. Time Travel, Brain Wipes, Liar, Digesting Monster, Hostage Lover, Nasty Keely, Dishy, Doctor Feel Sorry for Poor Spoonheads, though.
I think you were really testing Steve's reading ability there.
Testing handwriting. Yeah, interesting review. I've not watched it.
I like. What's the name?
Madame Vortex.
Madame Vortex. I've been enjoying the Doctor Who reviews.
It's all good. Richard Lawrence at Bilal. Sad to say, the first misstep of the series so far. Not sure the conclusion was worth the time, but still enjoying the Doctor.
I was surprised by that comment, actually, because not that it was a particularly amazing episode. It definitely stunk of thinking it was a lot cleverer than it was. I thought it was quite an average episode.
Mm.
But it's certainly not the worst one I've seen this season. So I just find it odd that this was the one that he thought was the first misstep, because it's at least the third misstep.
Right.
Like, in terms of quality consistency, it's the same as, like, the second, first and third one.
Okay.
I thought it was okay. It's kind of like most of this season. Capaldi has a few good moments, there's some okay ideas, but feels like there's some weird vitality or extra bit of stratosphere they're not hitting. It's slightly subpar. It's not bad television, but it's just there's something
you
off.
Want more,
I can't work out what's happening. Just feels slightly off somehow.
Okay.
I don't know if Moffat's spread a bit too thin with Sherlock, or if I'm just over-reading into it and it's going to pick up, I don't know.
We shall see. At HOM Podcast said, we spoke last week, the week before, sorry, about train scenes in films.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, any scene where Jackie Chan fights in or a top one?
Before we go on to where I think you're going to, we play a game. We've just started it. We had trains last week. Steve said hats. I know you threw that out to Reddit and got some great responses. Before we get to that, think of your favourite hat scenes. I want to hear you guys'.
An obvious go-to, Goldfinger.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Odd job.
Swing.
Yeah.
It's tough because sometimes when I think hats, I think of just like them being on someone, like the Blues Brothers, Freddy Krueger, Indiana Jones. Obviously, goes back and grabs that.
Yeah,
it would have been mine.
The iconic red bubble hat.
But I thought, no, think of it. I even thought a Cat in the Hat look and Croc.
Nice, yeah.
But then I was trying to think specifically when a hat's involved. So I thought I've got three.
Okay.
The Prestige, when Algier discovers all the hats. In the woods, so the machine's working and duplicating the thing.
Okay,
Tesla's machine.
That was a big one that came up on Reddit. A lot of people mentioned.
Oh, good.
But I've not seen it.
For a few dollars more, I thought about the hat jewel. Have you seen it?
No.
Clint Eastwood's shooting a hat away from a person. He's trying to pick it up.
Okay.
And then at a certain distance he can't reach, so the other one gets his gun out, shoots his hat off, and keeps it in the air by shooting.
Nice.
It's quite a cool scene. It was always one of my favourite scenes of that, so I got quite excited when you said hat. And then finally the sorting hat. When he sits on top of Harry Potter and he's like, oh, do you want to be part of the cunt group? You could be a Gryffindor, a Muggly Woo, a Raven, or an evil cunt. Which do you want to be? Because all Slytherin are bad. It to the point where if you were designated Slytherin, you'd expel them. Like, in some sort of Minority Report way, before they did anything.
Pull a trapdoor lever and drop the Wandle Beast below the floor.
And then the sort of match just, it's a bit like, what's she called in Ghostbusters? The receptionist in Ghostbusters.
Janine.
A bit like Janine when it's like, we've got one! And then a trap falls and they incinerate.
That would be good.
There's one, it's a helmet, so I guess it's a kind of a hat, but it was one of the biggest shocks, I think, and I can't remember if it's from Band of Brothers or Saving Private Ryan, but a guy gets shot, and it hits his helmet, and he takes his helmet off to look at it, he turns to his mate and laughs, and then he gets shot through the head.
Oh,
and it was one of those, that, fucking me, you know.
The scene in Blues Brothers where the hotel blown up, and they walk out, and he just goes, dusts himself off, and... pops out his hat, sticks his hat back on,
sunglasses,
just like, off we go.
Laurel and Hardy eating the hat.
Good call.
Good shout.
What did Reddit bring us?
Good shout. So we had, HOM Podcast said hats, Indiana Jones rescues hat before door drops. I mean, that's the iconic. A lot of responses on Reddit. I've just picked a few of my favourites that sort of interpretations. Uncle Buck, John Candy squeezing through the throng of kids at a house party looking for his niece, and some smart ass snatches his hat and gives him back the wrong one. That's quite an interesting one.
I didn't think of that one.
Yeah,
that's a good one.
That was Zorro Means Fox. Well, I'm a comedian. The ending of Goodfellas. Lois, the drug mule, apparently. It's a hat scene.
I don't remember what happens. I have to look it up. Anyway,
yeah, we need to look that one up. V's speech was... Someone just put V's speech.
From V for Vendetta.
Mm. He's got a hat on.
He's got a hat on.
Why have I omitted his hat from my memory bank?
Guy Fawkes hat.
Oh, it does, yeah.
It's
because for the rest of the film he doesn't really have it on. Mm. I must just not appropriate it as part of his look.
This one because I've not seen it for a while, but in Stand By Me, when Gordy's hat being taken by Ace and just thrown away is a really powerful
To me. Really,
and it's
horrible.
Also got a really good train scene in it, where they're running across the bridge.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, great shout. This one's an interesting shout. Darth Vader having the upper part of his helmet lowered onto him in Empire.
It was a super
creepy peek at the man beneath the armour. Mm. It was a really good shout.
It was a cool tease.
Lots of Clint Eastwood shouts, and the Prestige did get quite a lot of mentions as well. And Johnny Depp's hats in Pirates of the Caribbean, people mentioned. There were a few sort of random. Benny and June, the hat dance guy.
Yeah, cool.
Shout. So yeah,
Scott, word come to your head.
And he was the Mad Hatter.
He was.
Johnny Depp's got a bit of a hat thing.
He's got touché, all the hats. Yeah.
Sorry, what
think of a random word without saying.
Sword.
Sword. Best sword scenes in films. Something good. Let us know. Have you got anything else?
No, that's it. Thank you kindly.
Oh, that's the end of the show. Yeah. So do follow us on Twitter at Weekly Geek Speak. Do subscribe if you enjoyed us on iTunes. Please give us a review. Wherever you are in the world, give us a review. Thank you so much to Andrew for joining us earlier. The song The Zombie Sang.
I thought you were talking about himself in the third person.
I
really did panic. Like, what's happening?
But yeah, do check that out. We'll be popping the links in the podcast description. Mm-hmm. If you think it sounds interesting, as he says, even if he doesn't get funding, he's going to push and push and push this project. Cool. It's a light sci-fi. Just so interesting. You've heard the interview. It's amazing. Yeah. Follow us, like us, spread your love on our faces. Go throw us some.
Well, if you want.
Yeah.
Feel free. Give us your sword. Favourite sword films. And please join us again next week when we'll be. And we've just got so much more.
Stuff and things in your ears.
And next week we'll have a competition too, running into Halloween. Spooky, spooky.
Can I be in it this time? Or is it a conflict of interest?
It's a conflict of interest. You're not allowed.
No, but like.
No!
They don't know.
No.